5 Uhr morgens. Ein Gong ertönt. Es ist eiskalt im Zimmer und es kostet mich einige Minuten, meine Beine aus dem Bett zu schwingen, aufzustehen und mir mehrere Laken bestehend aus Skiunterwäsche, Hose, Pullover und Jacke anzuziehen. Boah, ist das kalt. Die Morgenmeditation mit anschließendem Talk steht auf dem Programm. Als ich den Meditationssaal im Kloster betrete, sitzen bereits die ersten buddhistischen Mönche und Schülerinnen und Schüler auf Bodenkissen und sind in tiefe Meditation versunken. Kaum sitze ich, ertönt erneut ein Gong. Alle schauen auf, um kurz darauf zusammen in eine geführte Meditation zum Thema Vergänglichkeit zu verfallen. An diesem Tag im Jahr 2020 habe ich in einem tibetischen Kloster über den Dächern Kathmandus zum ersten Mal zum Thema Tod meditiert und mich zum ersten Mal mit meinen Ängsten rund um das Thema auseinandergesetzt. In diesen Meditationen stellte ich mir die Fragen: Auf welche Art und Weisen kann ich sterben? Was passiert, wenn ich sterbe? Was glaube ich über den Tod? Welches glückliche Leben möchte ich leben, bis ich sterbe? Wie kann ich noch ein bisschen mehr im Moment leben und den Moment genießen? Warum ich im Kloster bin? Mein Vater ist schwer krank und könnte bald im Sterben liegen. Ich würde ihn gerne begleiten und ihn unterstützen, merke jedoch, dass meine eigene Unsicherheit und mein Respekt vor dem Thema mir im Weg stehen. Aus diesem Grund entscheide ich mich, mehr darüber zu erfahren und mich in einem geschützten Umfeld mit dem Thema Tod auseinanderzusetzen. Heute, ein paar Jahre und viele Erfahrungen später, helfe ich unseren Patientinnen und Patienten und Angehörigen, Wege aufzuzeigen, sich mit dem Thema auseinanderzusetzen oder die richtigen Ansätze für sich zu finden. So habe ich auch Olivia Burham, die Gründerin von Sacred Crossing in Los Angeles, kennenlernen dürfen. Olivia ist eine Death Midwife. Warum sie ein Unternehmen rund um das Thema Tod gegründet hat, wie sie die Würde des Menschen bis in den Tod und darüber hinaus schützt, wie sie Menschen rund um das Thema Tod durch Seminare und Fortbildungen aufklärt und was sie selber über den Tod denkt, das erzählt sie uns im heutigen Podcast. Der heutige Podcast wird in Englisch aufgenommen. Die Aufnahme wird aus diesem Grund auch auf YouTube mit deutschen Untertiteln veröffentlicht. Viel Freude beim Hören!
Herzlich willkommen bei Heilen, Geheimnisse ganzheitlicher Gesundheit. Dies ist ein Podcast von MUX Health, Ihrem strategischen Partner für exklusive, ganzheitliche Gesundheit. Ganz nach dem Motto, nie zuvor konnte die Medizin so viel Gutes tun wie heute und nie zuvor hinterfragten so viele Patienten ihre Ärzte, sitzen in diesem Podcast unsere Gründer, der Internist und Strategieberater Dr. Med Christian Becker und Helen Becker, Personal Coach und New Work Expertin, mit einigen der weltweit besten Experten zum Thema Heilen zusammen und schauen hinter die Geheimnisse der neuesten medizinischen Trends, hinter altbewährte Methoden und sprechen mit Heilern, Ärzten, Wissenschaftlern, Coaches und Health-Tech-Unternehmern.
Olivia, you are the founder of Sacred Crossing in Los Angeles, and you are a certified death midwife and home funeral guide. You hold bachelor degrees in education, natural theology, and sacred healing, and you have a lot of experience as a hospice volunteer and hands-on healer, which inspired you to create Sacred Crossings in 2005 with the vision of changing the culture of death and dying through education, death midwifery, and home funerals. Currently, you consult bedside with the dying in Los Angeles, and you manage the Sacred Crossing Funeral Home, where you offer alternatives to conventional funeral practices. Furthermore, you facilitate classes and workshops and a training program in the art of death midwifery. Welcome to our podcast. I'm thrilled to talk to you today. This is fabulous, and I'm really happy that it worked because you are in beautiful Canada right now.
Yes, that is correct. I have a lovely summer home here, so I'm enjoying a few months of the British Columbia weather and scenery. It's just lovely.
Oh, that sounds so nice. Olivia, as a founder of Sacred Crossing, your vision is changing the culture of death and dying through education. Can you tell us why?
Well, why? It saddens me that the majority of people, it seems, are very fearful of this end of life that's going to happen to each and every one of us. And I feel that it's a tragedy in a way that we live our whole lives creating, being of service, falling in love, having families, and everything is about beauty and growth. And then we dread this thing that we have collectively decided is this terrible event at the end where everything is very sad and painful and there's loss and grief and sorrow and this bundle of feelings. It's just a tragedy to me that this is what most people expect and dread, that is going to be the culmination of their beautiful, fabulous life. And so what began me on my journey was realizing that what if we've got it all wrong? And what if the very end of our life, as we explode into whatever's next, what if it is the most fabulous part of our life? And what if we could reframe it and move into it in a very different way, arms outstretched, falling into like bliss, like running through a meadow? And I know all that sounds very idealistic and Pollyanna-ish, but I grappled with the idea that this is an actual possibility. And what if we could collectively begin to embrace and embody this new way of facing it and experiencing it? And that's what got me started. Mm-hmm. Many years ago.
That's so interesting. What does it especially mean to you?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. conscious dying is the beginning to reframe it for myself. Well, I've been doing that now, so I have reframed it for myself. Putting my things together so that there's not a stone that has left unturned. So by the time I reach the end, I feel complete and I'm ready to go with a big thank you. And I'm learning that the most obvious way to do that is to be prepared at any moment. So my every waking moment has to be in readiness to die. Every morning when I wake up, today would be a good day to die, because I've taken care the night before of healing my relationships, of making sure that if I did die in my sleep, that my family wouldn't have to scramble, that they would be in a good place. I have taken care of them with my finances and the physical left behind. And doing that and being ready at a moment's notice to actually die takes forethought and consideration, and it's work, you know. So I'm in my teaching, I'm trying to do it twofold. One is to help the person emotionally be prepared, to have embraced any fears or phobias or ideas that might be less than open. And then the physical and the practical conscious dying is making sure that all of your physical needs and are put into place, that you know what you have explained your wishes for your healthcare, when you can no longer speak for yourself, when you are maybe in a state of semi-coma, you cannot speak, you cannot make decisions, that this person that you have assigned to be your advocate is very aware of my wishes. So she knows exactly what I want. So I feel safe. Even if I can't speak for myself and I'm laying in bed and I have a little medication, I know that my friend has got my back. And I'm very clear about that. She knows everything that I want. So that is a big part of it. And when you begin to unravel the many questions that need to be answered, one finds there's a lot to be considered. It takes time.
I personally like your opinion about death a lot. And I also said at the beginning that you work as a death midwife yourself and you give classes to train other death midwives. Why is the role actually called midwife? Is there any reference to a midwife giving birth?
Oh, absolutely. Midwife means with woman. And in the ancient days, it was the woman's role to hold that liminal space for when the soul entered this realm. So her job was to help put a field around the mother to protect her, to inform her of the best way to open fully to allow this soul to come through. And it was considered, and I think still is, that the female energy, which is one of receptivity, is perhaps the best of the two, the male and the female energy, to be able to hold that space open, because we, the woman, knows intuitively how to open and receive. So being with woman at birth is very, very similar to being with woman at death, because that is the exact same thing has to happen. One has to be open, fully open in every way so that the soul can leave, hopefully, through the crown opening in the top of the head. So I think it's perfect that it's a birth midwife and a death midwife, because the crossing over the threshold of that veil between dimensions is the same, birth or death.
Does it have other things in common? For example, a pregnancy lasts 9 calendar months. Do they play a role in the care of the dying?
Well, in my experience, having been with many people, when they first get that diagnosis and the doctor says there's nothing more we can do for you, you will find very often it's 9 months. I think we, in our fear, very often will reach for a cure or something that's going to stop this. Obviously, very naturally, instinctively, we want to survive. But when one is actually ready and these other things have been taken care of that I spoke of, then it's easier for them to just pull in. I call it, we pull in our oars, because we're all on a little boat. We're going down the river of life, and we row towards the things that bring us pleasure or that we can create. And when it's time to move on and to merge with the ocean of life, then we pull in our oars and let the river take us. And my sense is that it takes about 9 months. Pull in your oars and then you let the river take you. And during those 9 months, there's plenty of life to be experienced to the full, because you're no longer reaching for getting and having and doing. You're just simply being and allowing and receiving. And it can be a very gracious, peaceful, awesome experience.
That's a wonderful way of seeing it. And you also facilitate courses for death midwives and death doulas. Maybe we can start here. What is the difference between a death midwife and a death doula?
I began this work as a home funeral guide. I came in helping families keep the body at home on dry ice for 3 more days after they died before the burial or cremation. And at that time, we're talking almost 20 years ago, that was my role. And we were known as midwives because we were midwifing death in the family for the whole family and holding open that sacred doorway for 3 more days so that the adjustment can be made both for the person who's dying and the family left behind. There's a period of 3 days it takes to make that happen. And at the death, so I began in that realm, and that's what brought me to teach conscious dying so that a whole family could get to that point of loving open awareness. And that's when I began to teach conscious dying to both the individual on the deathbed and the family, and then to classes and students. And it occurred to me that many of the students, they were not so inclined to take care of the body after death. they were more inclined to be with the person and help them overcome their fears or heal their relationships or put together a legacy project. And it was clear that that is the role of the death doula. They are accompanying the dying person up until the last breath.
Mm-hmm.
Like the doula accompanies the birthing mother until the baby's born. So I do believe there are different roles, and they're broken up between the death doula. The home funeral guide is the one who oversees the body after death. Then there's the funeral celebrant, but the death midwife mm-hmm. holds the space for all of these other roles within it. So I think death midwifery is the overarching umbrella of end-of-life services. And the death doula is the one who's on the ground holding the hand of the one who's actually dying. That's how I interpret it. But we're still in the process.
What do you pay particular attention to during the training programs? What is really, really important to you? What you want that your participants learn and can do after they got trained with you?
Well, I think the most important is to honor the sacred and maintain the sacred. This is a profoundly sacred event, something beyond our intellectual knowing is happening. It's an opportunity to lean into the mystery that is beyond our understanding and beyond, to feel a peace, the peace that passeth understanding. And that to me is sacred. So I help my students become acutely aware of that is happening. This must never become a rote thing that just happens at the end of life. And I don't want it to ever become a checklist of things that you do and then poof, you're gone, but rather an opportunity for healing so much, not just internally, but within the family and then the community and the whole world as we embrace the very natural order of things, which includes birth and death in this never-ending spiral. So I think that is perhaps the most important. And then the second is learning how to be so present in every moment that your field becomes wide open with awe and gratitude and appreciation and nothing else. That to me is presence. And if we can practice in our daily life that profound sense of presence when we're alone with ourselves or whether we're in the company of another, we are assisting humanity, I believe, in this next step toward peace.
And wow, that's a really interesting quote. And in Germany, we have, for example, the Friedhofszwang. That means that the legal requirements that deceased persons be buried in a cemetery, or say that deceased persons have to be buried in a cemetery. How is it in the US, and what kind of services do people ask for?
Well, it is true. The body does have to be buried in a designated cemetery. Even in the states that allow the body to be buried on private property, that piece of land on the private property has to be assigned to like a private cemetery. So that is the same.
What kind of alternatives to conventional funerals practices do you offer?
It has now become, at least in California, that 50% of people are now cremated and 50% buried. So those who are buried are still mostly unaware that they have choices. So they go to a local cemetery, they purchase a plot, and the body goes into a concrete vault into the ground. So it's basically entombed in the ground in a casket that doesn't decompose. The body doesn't decompose naturally. There is nothing organic happening, which to me is a tragedy. Not just the incredible waste of resources to do all that, but the fact that the body doesn't return to the earth is sad to me. So alternatives are now being presented. The most obvious is the green burial. More and more people, once mm-hmm. they're aware of it, choose that, which means there's no concrete vault. The body goes directly into the earth and is covered up with earth and decomposes. There's no headstone. And if it is in a casket, there's no plastic or metal that goes into the ground. So that's becoming a little bit more popular, but still, sadly, it's very difficult to shift a collective consciousness which has decided that this is the way we do it. So they sort of defer to the norm. But in California now, we also offer full body sea burials. So we take the body out to sea on a boat, do a lovely ritual, and deploy it into the ocean. You don't have to buy a plot of land. You don't have to maintain the grounds, which to me is the ultimate in green. We also have alkaline hydrolysis, which is the aqua cremation, where the body is put into a vat of lye and everything on the bone completely becomes this liquid. And then the liquid is turned into fertilizer or put into the water system to help the treatment. I think that's a great idea. That's becoming a little bit slow because people can't wrap their head around grandma becoming two buckets of brown liquid that we're still so used to. You walk away from the grave and you go and visit it once a year. But it is changing. And the other one is recomposition, which is when the body is turned into soil and then put onto the earth, which is... It started in Seattle. Katrina Spade started this organization called Recompose. And I think that's fabulous too. It's going to take a while for people to become aware of it and to actively choose it. But there are options now, which is exciting.
That's really exciting. I wish we would have them also in Germany. So maybe we can talk about your work a little bit more. Do you remember a very special personal encounter or experience during one of your end of life care sessions?
Every single one is very special. We are such unique individuals and we die the way we live. So, and everybody's life is so different. The way they handle situations is different. I think perhaps the woman who touched me most was a lady who got a very short diagnosis, and the doctor found an epic tumor and told her that she only had 2 weeks left to live when she came back from the doctor's appointment, and she was only 65. That was striking to me because of the ease in which she just moved into this announcement. She didn't struggle with it at all. She accepted it right away. And she was a very vital woman before that. She wasn't sickly. She had a big community that she was a part of. And so I was curious at how easy she did it. And I asked her one day, I said, what enables you to move into your dying with such grace? And she said, I think it's directly related to my capacity to receive. She said, I've been practicing the art of receiving for many years now, and I do this somatic movement dance, which has helped my body to open and receive the little nuances that's going on inside. So now getting this news, it was just like, oh, how can I receive this, my death? So that was a very incredible teaching for me, to watch this woman lay down on her deathbed, arms outstretched, and just smile and receive, this is what's next, without any resistance at all. It was fabulous, and very peaceful. So,
do people know when the time of death is near? What is your experience about that?
I think we all know. I think those people who have practiced this art of presence, of being present, and noticing everything, the way the wind moves, the way their body is inside, we know. I mean, we might pretend we don't know and distract ourselves with a shiny object or people, but we know. And those who are willing and able to turn into their dying and face her, I think have an easier time of it. Because we can be in denial of it for so long, busying ourselves or distracting ourselves. But when it eventually comes, then you're forced to turn around. And it's that forcing that is what creates suffering.
Can you give us an example how people can find a deep inner healing like Yeah, the woman you told us before death, what can they do? What do you do with them? Or how can other people help them to find it?
Well, listen. We have to listen to one another. We can't teach somebody how to die. We can listen to where they're at and bear witness to their pain and their suffering and their regrets and their remorses. It's not unlike the priest who's, you know, taking the final confession. When you listen and allow them to unburden themselves, then there's an opening to take a deep breath and exhale and then receive dying. That is really the most important thing. The capacity to listen and be present and try to put all of your own fears out of the way, which is why I teach this class called Enter the Grave, which is all about how to face those internal terrors so that when you're with somebody, a loved one who's dying, you're not bringing that to the deathbed. And then you can be fully present. I think that's the most important thing.
What do you think is the secret of coping with the fear of death in a healthy manner?
Well, I think the first step is to start today. Even just listening to even a talk like this and being really honest with yourself. What about this process frightens me? And then rather than go, oh, I don't need to talk about that because I'm only 30 and I'm going to live for another 60 years, is daring to turn into it today and look at it with curiosity. What is it that I'm actually afraid of? And make that your meditation every day. Every day, meditate on your dying. I am going to die one day. Wow. When each day you look at it, you can expand it a little further and see a little deeper. Even if the first day you can only do it for a minute, that's great. At least you looked at it for a minute. And then you might be walking about or sitting in traffic and imagine it again. What happened if that lorry just rolled over on top of me and I was trapped and I died? And take a few minutes. I do. This is what I did for 20 years. I was not obsessed, but I forced my mind to go there until I had looked at it from every possible angle. You know, when you know, we're afraid of what we don't know. But when you've looked at it from every angle and you haven't been afraid to really look, it no longer has the power over you. And then when that softens, then you can begin the actual education of the understanding of it, what is happening, perhaps on a physical level and then on a spiritual level. And it becomes a way of life. It's one of those areas of study or inquiry that you just naturally do every day or once a week. We should all be doing it.
You're right, yeah. Olivia, let's talk about the future. Where do you see future trends in your field? What is going to change? What kind of changes do you already recognizing?
Where do I see future trends in my field? I think hospice is going to become much more widespread. The doctors, hopefully, are going to transfer their charge of a patient, perhaps hopefully sooner, into hospice so that people can begin this conscious dying approach much earlier on and not as it is right now in the last few days or few, like a week or so before they actually transition. I would love to see that. I think that's inevitable because people are realizing this enormous expense that's incurred when people are still, you know, in a hospital or under a doctor's care, reaching for more cures. So I do think that's going to happen. So more people will hopefully die at home. I love the idea that everybody has taken at least some kind of a course or education journey into what is dying, their fears and phobias of dying, so that they can support their loved ones at home when they die. And it becomes the most natural thing to do rather than go to hospital every day and stand around a bedside with all of the machinery and medication attached. I'd love to see that. And perhaps spaces where you can actually go to have an experience of dying in a different environment, outdoors, where people are specially trained in creating these amazing spaces. Like we have birthing rooms in hospitals. I think every hospital should have a dying room. And what if that was a special area where there are plants or a bed is in an outdoor environment and there's nothing to do with the medical anywhere around. It's just beauty, flowers. Loved ones can climb in the bed with their dying family member. And it's a thing of beauty and peace. And the people who are attending are chaplains and spiritual caregivers. That's what I would like to see. I think we'll get there. It's just going to take a little while. So I'm confident.
What would you do if you could only be successful and laws and other frameworks did not restrict you at all? What would you improve or initiate?
I think I would initiate the dying room for sure in hospitals. Mm-hmm. I would initiate every hospital have a death midwife to speak to family members and cancer patients. Even though they're still doing their treatments, they're also beginning to have these conversations with the death midwife, who then has a team of death doulas who can go in and support the family either at home or on the phone or in the hospital. So it just becomes a no-brainer that you would do that when you got closer to the end. You know, when it happens often enough, it just becomes the thing people do. The doctor passes the baton to the death midwife and she creates this environment of education and support and kindness and spiritual care. Yeah, that's what I would do. Mm.
And what do you wish with all your heart for your clients and other people who fear in a special fear of death?
I would wish that they could find their Anamkara. And the Anamkara is your soul friend. It's that special person that you can open to and relax into, who loves you unconditionally. I would love for everybody to know who that person is in their life. And it might not be your spouse. That might be a different sort of relationship. Probably unlikely to be your children. It's that friend who is willing and strong enough to take you every step of the way home. I would wish that for everyone, and to urge them in their life when they're teenagers in school to have this program for everybody. Before they graduate high school, you have to have done the death class, and you know, it'd be once a week for 10 weeks or something where they can learn all of this information and begin to talk about what is your soul friend. Because teenagers are all into lovers and romance, but this soul friend is something very different, very special. Mm. Yeah, to open up these doorways, to have these conversations much earlier.
What is a soul friend for you?
My soul friend is the person who, no matter what I do or say or however far away I go, they're 100% there. The love is different to... there's no reason to love this person other than there's two souls coming together. I think you can have multiple soul friends, but it's rare. Just having one, it's the person you call at 3 a.m. and you have, without hesitation, you wouldn't think about whether they would pick up the phone or not.
What topics should be laughed about more and which topics should be seen more easily?
Which topic should be laughed about more? I think the human condition. We should laugh about our humanness and how obsessed, addicted we are and how crazy we are and how completely off track most of us go most of the time. And it's okay. We don't have to make ourselves wrong for that. It's sort of funny that we are these creatures of habit and that we're not reaching for the divine more. that's important to me to laugh about. And laugh, then you can laugh at others and not, you know, make them wrong. You know, people call me and they go, how can I get my dad to talk about the fact that he's dying? And I find that sort of amusing. Why should he? He doesn't want to. He's in denial. Let him be. Why would, you know, letting go of our need to get everybody to face it and wake up, you know, perhaps there's eternity to figure it out and we don't have to get it right this lifetime, and just add in his denial and wishing to smoke cigarettes and watch wrestling a day before he dies is totally fine, you know. That's the light, keeping it light, keeping it, that's okay. And somebody will say, I can't believe he's holding on. How can we get him to die quicker? I'm always astounded by that. Like, why would you want him to die? Because you'd rather go back to work? And it's tedious to have to sit bed 2 or 3 days. But why would we want to hurry him? He needs these extra days to do whatever he's doing in his mind as he's laying there. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to stop this process quicker and get it over with. My goodness, let it take as long as it takes and try to just enjoy, or if not enjoy, just be present to what's in front of you. Yeah.
Finally, I would like to invite you to share some tips and tricks with our listeners. Do you feel like that?
Tips and tricks for what?
Maybe just a hint. What could be, or what can affected persons, relatives, or friends do themselves when they notice that fear and anxiety about death are present?
Well, the first thing is to recognize that if you're afraid or anxious, you're futurizing. You're imagining something that's not yet happened, and we don't know that whatever it is that's going to happen is going to happen. So it's all unreal. And just first of all, just acknowledging that I'm making something up that's not real, because again, it brings you back to the present. And then the question I ask myself is everything okay right now? And when you look at, you know, your hand or the cup, the computer, the tree, it's perfect. It's just perfect. And then become aware when your mind just bounces out of this now and goes along into the future again. And okay, thank you. And then bring yourself back to presence. That's the most important thing. Is everything okay right now? Yeah. Everything is okay right now. It's a profound opportunity to be present in that. I urge people to get to a place where they can honestly say, I don't mind what happens. I don't mind what happened.
It's not that I don't care about
what happens. My heart can still be open and I can feel compassion and wishing, or not wishing it were another way, of course, but knowing that there is another way. But my mind is off its course of trying to control and manipulate the outcome. Because the truth is, I may end up in a car accident, on life support, in a coma, which is what I try to teach. So if my worst case scenario does end up happening, I have got to get to a place, for myself, where I don't mind that either. And I can honestly be present to that while it is happening and be okay with it. So is everything okay right now? And I don't mind what happens. Those are my two friends that I'm endeavoring to walk side by side with me through this, through my life, as well as my death. Yeah.
Finally, please complete this sentence. It is especially important to me that comes across in this podcast.
I think it is especially important to me that the notion that we can fall into our dying openly, arms outstretched, is a distinct possibility for every one of us. If we just begin to think about it, read about it, educate ourselves, meditate on our dying. I really believe that we can change not just the culture of dying, but the energy around the act of dying profoundly.
In any case, I wish that you, dear listener, got the desire to deal with the topic of death and that you can accompany people on this path a little better. Because then a life full of well-being could become really possible. Thank you, Olivia, for being with us today. I hope we'll meet soon. I'm really inspired by the work you do. Thank you so much, Olivia.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure to talk so openly about my favorite subject. I would just like to urge listeners that if you'd like to learn more about the classes and the workshops on for the death doula and the death midwife, please go to sacredcrossings.com. And there you can also find out about our alternative funeral home here in Los Angeles and the services that we now offer. Sacredcrossings.com. Thank you.
Das war der Podcast Heilen, Geheimnisse ganzheitlicher Gesundheit. Ein Podcast von MUX Health. Vielen Dank, dass Sie heute dabei waren. Mehr Informationen finden Sie auf der Webseite www.mux.health. Abonnieren Sie diesen Podcast und teilen Sie ihn mit Menschen, die das Thema interessiert oder die davon profitieren. Damit helfen Sie, den Podcast in die Welt zu tragen und noch mehr Menschen auf ihrem Weg zur Heilung zu unterstützen. Über eine positive Bewertung freuen wir uns. Alle Links zur Folge finden Sie in den Shownotes.